This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Iconic from Jim. That's a good crowd pop, though, too. It's a great crowd pop. How long do you think Jim Nance was working on McElroy Has His Masterpiece? I'd say at least 3 hours during the tournament.
Probably like, because of how Sunday went.
Yeah. Like, it was like going back and forth. He's like,
the masterpiece is a Jackson Pollock at this point, but... Yeah.
But, like, do I need to start thinking about something for Justin Rose?
That's your topical art humor for the day.
You've got some splatters in there, some of those cigarette butts dropped into the painting.
That's what Sunday was.
Oh, man. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I have still not recovered from yesterday. What a day. This Masters was awesome. It's up there. For me, the ones I've seen, I'm 26, turning 27 at the end of the month, so don't give me like something in the 80s. I did not see it. This in 2019 with Tiger were some of my favorites. The difference was with Tiger, I just enjoyed Sunday. It was like, Oh man, he's going to do it. This is awesome. And there were some struggles. There was some stress, whatever. Molinari had to hit in the water, but eventually we got there and it was kind of this casual.
But also Tiger wearing red on a Sunday means it's on business.
And it felt like old Tiger that I really hadn't seen much. And it was sort of this March to 18. The same cannot be said about Rory McIlroy yesterday.
No, especially at Augusta. And
oh, man.
The struggles he's had there encapsulated all within one day. And that became probably one of the craziest parts about it is it was all in one day.
Yeah.
The chaos of will he, won't he, to add the drama to the career Grand Slam. By the way, it required incredible days 2 and 3 to get himself into the conversation, which Cav Sylvester was with us on Friday, and he said before day 2 started for McIlroy, Rory has the potential to get himself back into the conversation at any moment's notice.
And he goes out there and shoots, I think, a 66 for day 2.
Yes.
Goes to 6-under after botching the end of round 1.
And then
on
Saturday, storms through to take the lead.
Yeah, and to be fair, he was going to have a really, quote-unquote, comfortable lead going into Sunday if it weren't for a 40-foot birdie putt from Bryson on 18 to end Saturday.
Which is insane.
And then the day started off in the most Rory fashion possible. Double bogey on 1. Let's go. And you're just like, no.
We're going to do it, we're gonna do it the hard way today.
Not like this. Yeah. And, I mean, ultimately, he storms back. Birdies 3 and 4. DeChambeau kind of falls off. Pretty much as quickly as he arrived. Mm-hmm. He ultimately finishes the day at 7-under. McIlroy, goes on to win it. He's not even really in the conversation. Justin Rose is the guy who storms back. By the way, on hole 10 at the turn, the guys that finish 1-2, McIlroy is at 14-under. Rose is at 7-under. They eventually play in a playoff. That also tells you, number one, how good Justin Rose played, how bad McIlroy at times was playing. The shot at 15 is stunning, but before that, it's the double bogey on 13, the bogey on 14, even arguably the bogey on 11, where you're just like, dude, come on. Like, it's there. It's yours. You're the guy.
Right. And I think that that was probably what makes it the most interesting, is because of the fact that there was struggle within the day. And it kind of allows you to see the beauty of sports once again, which is, even when you screw up, you put it behind you and you figure out what's going on in front of you.
Yeah.
And you try to just make up the ground that you lost. It's not about, in his head, will he, won't he? It is, that stunk. Let's try to erase that.
Well, and you look, and maybe the perfect hole for that is 15. It's after the double bogey and the bogey on 13 and 14, you took a 6-iron yesterday or 7-iron. The clubs flipped from Saturday to Sunday. And he just curls it over the water onto the green, setting himself for an eagle putt. But to that point, as great as that shot was, he misses the eagle putt. Because of course he does. Because that's Rory McIlroy. And on 18, it's a perfect drive. The hardest part, Rory, get it in the fairway. Oh, you did it! And then you hit it in the bunker. And you still set yourself up for a makeable putt. The chip wasn't awesome. It wasn't perfect, but you set yourself up for a makeable putt. What does Rory McIlroy do? What does he always do? He misses it.
Well, you can't say what does he always do if he has a career grand slam.
But I mean in the context of where we're
within
at that
Augusta,
moment.
Though.
And in that moment, you're going, of course he's going to miss it. That's Rory McIlroy. But then in the playoff, he does end it. And to a certain extent, was it the prettiest Masters win we've ever seen? No. Is it going to go down as an all-time great performance? Absolutely not. He made 4 double bogeys on the week. It's terrible. And yet no one will be able to take away the fact that he did finish with a guy like Scottie Scheffler. Still somewhat there, by the way. Scottie didn't have his best stuff, but he finishes 8 under par on the week. You know, DeChambeau was there at the start, including taking the lead at, what, the second or third hole. He had the lead. And Rory just... He didn't let the mental mistakes get him. You didn't really see this utter, complete, and total collapse. There were moments where it felt like it, but then there were moments of brilliance. We've already mentioned the shot on 15, but even the birdie on 17 to seem like he had locked it in. It's just, it was so legacy-defining.
Yes, and I think that that's very interesting for Rory to be able to finally get that career grand slam, for him to finally get the green jacket, becoming only one of 6, a rare company, in order to do so. And the first one to do it in 25 years since Tiger.
First one to do it in 25 years since Tiger, and then to that point as well, and for Rory specifically, his first major win in 11 years. You know, it's not even just that he was looking for the green jacket. He was, of course. He wanted to complete the career grand slam, something that, you know, another great golfer of his and Tiger's generation, Phil Mickelson, hasn't been able to do. He's finished second a lot of the U.S. Open. He's never won it. But it was also the fact that his last major win was 2014. He got 2 of them in 2014, Open Championship, PGA Championship, but that was the last year he had won a major.
God, time is so weird.
And you had...
Because here I am thinking, oh, 2014, that doesn't sound
right,
so bad.
Right, not that long
right,
ago.
No, it's 2025.
Yep.
Get wrecked.
And, I mean, he even, you know, the disaster at the U.S. Open last year, where Bryson does beat him. It was just, it was everything you'd maybe want in a Rory McIlroy major winner at this point in his career, where it was just like, yeah, I've aged 35 years, I need a cigarette, I need to go take a walk. And we'll meet back in 20. Like, that was the feel of it. And I wouldn't change a thing. I would not change a thing about this. I really wouldn't. I thought it was perfect. I really did. That was some of the most fun I've had watching live
sports.
You're
right. I do think that there was a lot to it of, like, the stress probably makes it even sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of leads into a lot of takeaways, really, of... How much drama are we willing to watch? How much stress are you willing to go through to watch something like this? We live in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Stress is a normal thing when I'm watching sports. And Rory McIlroy is a nice little national perspective of that, of you just want him to have it, and he's not taking it. The end of the Masters was kind of akin to like the second wild card in the Eastern Conference. Nobody wants it.
Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted
it. So here's Rory finally trying to at least just get it done, and then he Canton, it's a playoff, and at that point, finally, he's able to win it. And it really does speak to drama in sports is great. This is why I hate dynasties. This is why I hate teams that are always too good. It's because of the fact that it gets boring.
Yep, this is why we watch is stuff like this where
it's drama.
Even if you weren't a big golf fan, there's a part of you probably paying attention to social media going, did he win it? Did he do it? Did he do it? Did he do it?
I'm not going to lie to you. So ready? That's me.
Yeah.
I was paying attention at that point because I had seen tweets from you or Jeremy or Joe or Brian effectively all saying the same thing of, Rory's taking years off of my life.
Yeah.
Get it done.
That's how it felt too at the end.
That was the entire day.
Like, man, I'm rooting for you, but like, I'm kind of mad that I'm rooting for you.
I'm kind of mad that you're doing this right now.
Yeah. It was just
which you should be used to that. Everyone around here should be used to this. Every single one of you that watched around the area should be used to the stress of cheering for the person that you want to cheer for and how stressful that it's getting. As a matter of fact, you should have been there chilling outside, shorts, with a pina colada, and just saying, all right, this is normal.
This is where I live.
This is where I live. Everything about this is normal. So you're being a little dramatic when you're posting on social media, this is taking years off my life. Bro, you cheer for the Bills.
Yeah.
Willingly.
Yeah. I do that.
We all do. Anyone listening, this is where you live. Watching Rory McIlroy, all I have to do is replace the terms football for golf and Bills for Rory McIlroy, and we're at the same normal amounts of stress.
And you can argue there's a lot of similarities to them. The Bills, you could argue, have had multiple times in just this run here, this 5-6 year run, where they should have at least been in the Super Bowl. This year, of course, you can count it.
And then even historically.
13 seconds. Historically, you go to wide right.
You had four times to do it. And the Bills would also, kind of like Rory on 18. You cause the stress.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get it done. So it's nice, though, that in this sense, the part that's different is there is a happy ending.
Yeah.
For those that like Rory McIlroy, there is a happy ending. That's the part where we don't live. That's where we actually get kicked out, evicted, and told live on the streets, scrub. Mm-hmm. But it, like I said, the stress levels, no. These should be normal for you.
I was locked in, man.
Very, very normal for you.
But you know what, though? It was normal, but that was part of it, too. Like, if you're a Rory fan or you know, obviously now living in Buffalo, you do expect the rug to be pulled under.
Yes.
You do. You expect...
Again, that's where you live.
The ending.
Shorts, pina colada, hang out.
But I think that's maybe why I appreciated how much it meant for Rory to win. And this is not a new thought. I saw a lot of Bills fans seeing Rory's immediate reaction going, that's how I'll be when the Bills finally do it or when the Sabres do it. So, you know, nothing new. But like that was my immediate thought too, was that was a happy ending.
Yes.
You know, there was a moment where you're like, man, he could like – I mean, he's not going to, but he could retire and we're good.
Yeah.
He's not going to, but like, it was the same with Tiger in 2019. There's the end of the documentary.
Yes.
There's the end of the movie. Tiger whatever has years afterwards.
Whatever happens is whatever.
Yep. Rory is going to have years afterwards. He might win more majors. We have no idea what this pressure off his back is going to do.
Come back and win it again all over again.
We have no idea what this is going to do to him. But the documentary, the period of his career, of these 11 years of, he was still... inarguably one of the greatest players on earth and could not win those majors, could not specifically win the Masters. His collapse in 2011 and having struggles at Augusta. And then, of course, you have the U.S. Open loss last year and some of these other ones, I think an Open Championship as well. There's been the struggles for him. And for it to finally come due, it's the same with the Bills. If the Bills eventually win a Super Bowl, which I do believe they will with Josh Allen, I do – still believe him and Lamar are too talented to not walk away with at least one.
Right.
There is going to be a documentary, not for Baltimore, for Buffalo. Baltimore, you have two already, but for Buffalo. but there will be a happy ending to it. You can watch Four Falls of Buffalo, that 30 for 30 that ESPN yes. did, and not leave it going, oh, I'm in a way worse mood than I was 2 hours ago. You know, right? you can rewatch 13 seconds and not go, yeah, that's where my life peaked and plummeted all at the same time. It doesn't have to be that anymore. I still have a tough time. I love rewatching old games. Before most seasons start, I will go rewatch a lot of the highlights from the previous season. I enjoy doing it. I did it when they were bad.
Right.
It is always difficult for me to watch the playoff losses, though, especially now, because there isn't the happy ending of, oh, but at least we have 2020, or at least we have 2021, or whatever.
Right.
We don't have that.
We don't.
And it's why, like, even like for some of these Sabres seasons, I'm not even talking about cups, I'm talking about playoffs. It's hard for me to like root for Tage Thompson to have 50 goals. I want him to for him personally, but I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, I can't wait to rewatch those like highlights, you know, in the dog days of summer. Because I'll be like, it's in the middle of a 13-game losing streak. It's a nice goal, though. Like, I can't.
You sounded so depressed saying that.
Like, I can't do that. Where now for Rory, I can watch some of these highlights and the lowlights and laugh at him and go, yeah, but he got in 25. That's good.
Yes. It is, again, I do love, though, that he was able to get this done because of the fact that people love the story. It's mm-hmm. like you always say, you are here for the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why we're all here, is we're here for the story. It's why I was mad when March Madness went in chalk
mm-hmm.
throughout the tournament. Because you like a story.
We, and then you had to kind of scrape and claw and find one.
You have to find a story at that point. That's why we all do this. It's an escapism and it's a story. You don't want to read the story as a kid, read a story of a book and it's just the kingdom is the kingdom and nothing happened to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Everything stayed the same.
The good guys always won and there were no problems ever.
There was no drama ever and everything is normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible story. That's the Chiefs running the freaking AFC.
Yeah. Patriots before them.
Exactly. Dynasties, garbage.
Dynasties become garbage. I think that's a big part of it.
Very true.
Dynasties because before the Chiefs win their first Super Bowl, they had the heartbreak.
Yes.
D. Ford lining up off sides.
Yes.
They should have gone to the Super Bowl that year. They eventually do become the evil empire.
Oh, yeah.
The Patriots really never had that moment.
No. Well, no.
Bledsoe gets hurt. Brady comes in. They're immediately good.
They do lose in the Super Bowl to Brett Favre with Drew Bledsoe at quarterback.
Oh, no, that's right. That's right. Okay,
so there is a little heartbreak injected.
So the Belichick-Brady Patriots never really had the heartbreak. The Patriots themselves
The
do.
Patriots as a franchise
that's right.
had.
That's right.
Tony Eason plays in a Super Bowl and gets absolutely wrecked by the 85 Bears.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So oh, no, not Eason. Oh, my God. I had my Patriots quarterbacks mixed up there. I don't even remember who their quarterback
Grogan?
Was.
Grogan?
I think so. But, yeah. Why did I say Tony Eason? Probably because he played
it's
for
close.
That one.
It's close.
Yeah. He probably played for him at one point. Anyway.
No, you're right. 85 is Tony Eason.
Oh, my God. Look
you
at me go.
You nailed it. You nailed it.
That
you're
was
good.
Before I was alive. Look at me go.
There you go.
I know my history sometimes. And then I question it.
Do you know their other quarterback on their final roster?
No.
Tom Ramsey. Grogan got hurt that year. He was on
IR. I was going to say, I'm not going to know that one.
No. It's okay. No,
that's okay, though. I got it right. Then I thought I didn't.
Then we brought you back.
Then I was back. So, yeah, there's been heartbreak for the Patriots franchise even so. Before they had that run. But now, Patriots fans can never be allowed to talk about it because they had that run.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs fans and all that heartbreak that they'd had leading up to it. No, that's all gone now. You don't get that opportunity to say, I was alive for this. Yeah, and? What you got now? Shut up.
No. Update. It was Grogan and started in the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Eason was on the roster. Grogan does get hurt, but he's
okay,
in the Super
so
Bowl.
Okay, so that's why I had it mixed.
Yeah, there we go.
But they did both play.
They did both play.
Okay.
Eason went 0-6.
Yeah.
That'll do it. But, yeah, there was heartbreak. And, you know, the dynasty I always look at, too, for becoming the villain is the Curry Warriors.
Yes.
When they were coming up, there was this.
They were like, oh, my God, you guys are trying to form your big three and it's all homegrown drafted?
Homegrown, and you're playing a different style from everybody. It's the you're not dunks. You're not the big guys. It's these long threes where you're just like, okay, this is how we're playing now. It's run and gun kind of style.
And then they broke the game.
and then they broke the game, and then they add Kevin Durant.
And then they really break the game.
And then what could have been a really fun rivalry, them and Cleveland, kind of quickly became, oh, Cleveland can't match up with these guys.
Nope.
And Cleveland's better than anyone in the East because of LeBron.
Not when you have four options, yeah.
Yeah. And so dynasties always become the bad guys. That's just the nature of the game. The same would be true for the Bills. If the Bills, if you replace the Chiefs,
look at
the
AFC East right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring.
Yeah. There's really no one challenging Buffalo.
The Dolphins every now and then will give you a little bit of a drama rush.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. It's boring.
It's boring.
Patriots, Jets, you're boring. Dolphins, you're also boring. Sometimes you're not.
Well, yeah, they're boring in the sense of once the season starts, you're like, you guys are bad, as always.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the offseason we're like, oh, probably won't work, but maybe.
Yeah, the Patriots are actually the ones not being boring.
Yeah.
What's up with Miami and the Jets, though? What are they really doing?
Mm-hmm.
What have they done? Nothing. Boring. So, yes, just to circle back on this of, like, what it means and, like, I don't want to necessarily say, though, that, like, even Tiger Woods, with his run of dominance,
mm-hmm.
I think it's because there was a personality there within that it wasn't as boring. But it's not like he won every single major
when
he stepped on the golf course.
And it was a lot like the Curry Warriors or even the Jordan Bulls, where it was just – he looked so different from everybody. The way he played, having to change golf courses, and just how dominant he was, there was something entertaining to it. I would argue if the Chiefs still played the way they did when they started this run mm-hmm. in 2018, I think people would still like him. It's the fact that they've gone to defensive, not the big plays. You know, Mahomes doesn't look like the same quarterback. It's a lot of
kind
late
of shoddy
game
sometimes
luck.
Offensively.
Yeah. I think that's what's led people to not like them. The Patriots were like that forever.
Yes.
And you get bored of that almost immediately.
And then, even in their later years, yeah, there's a 13-3 Super Bowl win in there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, which is, like, I mean, that's what causes it. And I think that's because we've had this conversation, too, of, like, why do certain dynasties, like, have that aura about them? I think it is how they're played. It is how they're won. Jordan was late-game heroics by him. He's also a guy that was scoring like 40 points a game in the playoffs.
Yes.
You know, he was a force of nature. Curry and the Warriors were arguably forces of nature, playing a game very differently from everybody else. Tiger Woods playing a game very differently from everyone else. Where now the Chiefs are just, yeah, they're really well-run. They don't make mistakes. Everyone else makes mistakes around them. Woo.
Woo.
This is so much fun. It's why Buffalo and Baltimore are so much fun to watch because you're having Alan Lamar still making the absurd plays that you go, there's maybe no one
in
NFL history.
Being the ones to will them to win.
Yeah, there's maybe no one in NFL history that compares to them.
And just to circle it back, though, I just more or less wanted to clear it up of like, I don't know if Tiger Woods was necessarily boring when it happened, though. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it has to do with also personality.
Oh, yeah.
The focus, the engagement. The pop that people would always be ready to see from him. I don't know if Tiger ever really became a villain with how good he was.
Outside of his personal life, I would agree.
Yeah.
Because he had the personal stuff, but in terms of on the course?
On the course.
Never. I don't think he ever really hit that period. I agree with that. Because then it quickly became we were all rooting for him post-injuries mm-hmm. and post-personal life.
Right.
It's a curious thing with like these legacies and the dynasties and such. And on that, this was really my big thing after Rory had won. Number one, I'm addicted to the chase. I think we've all talked about that with the Ovi stuff.
Right.
Just a few weeks ago, him breaking
the record.
Yeah,
that's right. We just talked about a chase.
I am addicted to that. And you mentioned it and I mentioned it. It's the chase. It's the storyline that gets me into sports.
It's also how.
You know, I like the fact that Alex Ovechkin looks older than he is. The gray in his beard as he's going out
to win
there.
The gray in his
hair. Yeah. With Rory. Looking back on it, I kind of love that he didn't win in a runaway and kind of shot himself in the foot a few times. I loved it because that's
how
that's how it felt like it should happen. And so on that, And on the legacy talk, we've already put it to Twitter. We got to hit a quick time out here. But kind of the question for the day, 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump in there. Which athlete needs a championship to help cement their legacy of their own? Whether that be, you know, Rory has now won a career Grand Slam. He already had majors, but he wins the Masters. We already have some athletes that we talk about regularly that need to do it. So for you, who are the guys that need to win one to cement their legacy? Again, 803-0550, the number to call. But before we take our first time out, do want to let you know to join us in the fight for cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal. Visit WGR550.com for details. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
The patrons, again, this is it's such a unique event. The no phone policy just makes everyone so present and so into what we're doing out there on the golf course. And it's just an absolute pleasure to play in an atmosphere like the one we played in today. So to everyone that stuck around, thank you so much.
Got him.
I feel attacked.
Got him. Oh, man.
With that being said, and I know Sneaky Joe tweeted about it, the live crowd shots to when they're changing the scoreboard was awesome.
So you admit you're wrong.
No, I'm still right. But that was funny.
Hang on.
That was fun to watch a bunch of people go, what do you mean they're tied?
I think it's just funnier that he's still unwilling to move on from it.
It's crazy. I don't understand it.
It's archaic.
Your take is archaic.
Your take is kind of archaic.
That's fine.
Point.
It's okay. I'll stay with it.
Coming from someone who is publicly acknowledged as being a nice guy here, I'm going to tell you a not so nice thing, which is, yeah, you're wrong, and it's okay. Just admit it.
I'm going to go to a Sabres game tomorrow, and I'm actually going to try the no phone challenge and not go on my phone for the entire game.
No. Ready?
Do you think he'll do it? Do you think he'll be able to do it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think he can do it.
I think I give you a different challenge. You should end the season how you started it. You sent us a text of that burger.
Oh. Look at his face. I wish we had a camera on
he's
Josh.
He
immediately
down.
Went down.
It's
a long season.
No.
You almost forgot about it.
No.
Yes.
Maybe.
Hey.
Maybe.
Hey, look at me. Do it.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Rory McIlroy does complete his career Grand Slam, his fifth major of all time, his first ever Masters win. He does it in dramatic fashion in a playoff with Justin Rose, finally got it done. I did watch a lot of his press conference afterwards. My favorite part was not actually his press conference. It was Bryson DeChambeau. Afterwards saying like, oh yeah, Rory like never talked to me. And I'm like, yeah, dude. He's trying to win. And you went away pretty quick.
He's trying to win.
And this is my thing too. I only imagine Bryson tried talking to him when there was like a 5-shot gap where he's like, I'm not going to win it. I'm going to ask him how he's doing. And Rory's just locked in. I do not imagine
he's like,
it was
I'm trying not to mess this up, Bryson. Not now.
Like, I just imagine it was not at the beginning. I know he also doesn't like him, but I just in my head, I have this like fun idea that like Bryson's like, I'm not gonna win it. Let's see if I can play some head games.
You know
here.
What it is? It's the reincarnation of the Jordan Spieth and Bryson meme where he's walking in the background and Spieth has got his eyes closed, like. Oh.
No, that was Brooks Koepka.
Oh, Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. Oh,
not
Spieth.
Oh,
that was so much fun.
Yep.
That was good. Yeah, I don't like Koepka, but like his look of just hearing Bryson walk by talking to somebody.
Genuine disgust.
I mean, made him. Oh, that was fun. That was good. I don't know where Koepka finished in the tournament this week. I mean, I know he was there. He's also someone looking for his first gold jacket. That was also during Bryson's, like, everyone hates you phase. You play super slow. You're treating like a math equation. I have come to start to like Bryson. I watch a lot of YouTube golf, and he's very
By
much
the way,
a
Brooks
prominent.
Brooks Koepka got cut.
Oh, he didn't make
the
cut?
He had a +5.
Oh.
Yeah, he got cut.
Oh. Well, can't be there all the time.
Hey, man. You at least live on in memes.
You at least live on in memes. Let's go to the phones here. First up today, Matt is on the line. Matt, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys, doing well. Thanks for having me. Just real quick on that whole no phone challenge thing, I wanted to add a little perspective and, you know, completely admitting there's a generational thing here. I'm 41 years old, so there's a little subset of, you know, we used to be known as Gen Y, born between like 78 to 83, something like that. So when I was growing up, we didn't have the internet until about high school. And that's when like AOL and Prodigy started coming out. So, you know, my generation of like this 5-6 year people kind of knew what life was like growing up before the internet and then grew up with it during high school. And then, of course, college, everything exploded. And that was awesome. Same thing with smartphones. So my first cell phone was, you know, the old one, the flip phones, and everything like that. And then the smart ones came out. So with the whole no phone challenge, I think for somebody like me, it's actually very easy to do it because I kind of grew up without it. Yeah. And I look at it as a tool like, hey, it's really cool. I like it. But I personally have never become addicted to it. And I understand a younger generation grew up with it and that's what they're used to. But I actually enjoy sitting in a restaurant or something without a phone, eyes up, just trying to find somebody. And yeah, if there's somebody to talk to, I'll do it. And you can kind of tell early on. So I just wanted to add that perspective. That's all.
Matt, I want you to just be able to hear this. Zach will straight up, as a hypocrite of sorts, just take time reading and be away from his phone entirely. So that makes this master's take of his so much worse.
It is purely, Matt, thanks for the call. It is purely off the idea of I don't like that it's taken away from me. I have never been somebody, I'm not addicted to my phone. I can put it away, no problem. Yeah, I spend.
All right, Rage Against the Machine, calm down.
I spend like an hour a day reading. And it's usually the night before I go to bed, I put my phone on the other side of the room.
Or your outright refusal to answer us when we want to talk to you about something from work.
Yes, that's fine.
Or just anything in general. And you know, I am your friend.
The problem is I'll see the phone ringing. I'll see the phone ringing across the room, and I'll just like do like a little peek up, and I see it. I'm like, I'll get back to him later. It's clearly not an emergency. We're okay.
And then the minute it goes to the voicemail, I was like, you suck.
The second call is when I'm like, that might be an emergency. That might be an emergency. I'll go pick it up.
Yeah.
But the first call, I'm like, I've got like 10 more pages in this chapter.
I'm gonna
get through this.
That's where I need to make sure to throw you under the bus.
But that's the thing, like for the Masters specifically, I think it's an archaic rule. I like the majesty of no one's pulling out their phones and everyone's
but also,
getting the video.
Yeah, nobody knows when the scoreboard is changing, or the leaderboard, excuse me. When it's changing, the drama sets in and people are like, wait, what do you mean?
I like the live reactions, the whole thing. My thing is I don't like being locked off from the world if anything happens. I don't like to like look to the immediate negative, but if something's happened with my family, I don't like the idea that a master's worker is going to have to like scour the course to try to find me in what could be a very
delicate
time.
Imagine the stress
time.
On that person, by the way.
Yeah. I don't love that. I do understand people that love it. And for me, it's not even necessarily a phone addiction.
It's you just don't want people to tell you you can't have it.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Churlish.
I'm cool with that.
Insubordinate and churlish.
I always end up finding a new Key and Peele video, by the way, that I've never seen. Like, there's no rhyme or reason why, but I always found a new one. I'm like, I've never seen this one. It's just as funny as every one of them.
So when it comes to Rory McIlroy, though, one of the things that we were really discussing heading in, and it's something that Jeremy and Joe talked about more at length, is the fact that Rory McIlroy, he ends up with a legacy-defining win.
Mm-hmm.
And it very quickly can shuffle into one of the more fascinating parts of conversation of which athlete needs a championship of their own to cement a legacy, to even create a legacy of sorts. And there's a lot of different ways you can look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Different sports. Obviously, your local ties here. But furthermore, just even in a sport where we don't have a team, like in the NBA or within the MLB,
mm-hmm.
there are plenty of other players that you look at with this sort of thing. But there was someone, Zach, that we put the tweet out at Derek Kramer 49, following the legacy defining win, who needs it? And I want you to read what Matthew tweeted in as we get connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Norton Kia. I'm blanking on the rest of the read right now.
Gotcha.
Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at NorthtownKia.com. I had it. Steel trap. I lost it for a second. There we go.
Consummate professional.
So go for it.
So Matthew tweeted in. I believe it's a different Matt from the one that called in. But Matthew tweets in. Everyone says various AFC quarterbacks like Allen, Lamar, Burrow, etc. If no other AFC quarterback besides Mahomes wins a Super Bowl during this period of NFL, what's the conversation? Are those guys seen as underachievers? Quote, it's a shame they didn't win a Super Bowl.
And I think that there's another folder that you can open in that conversation of like what he says. Does that also shape the Chiefs and Mahomes' legacy
mm-hmm.
into one that was really like, oh, you were really truly evil? At least Brady had a couple slip-ups where these guys were able to go to Super Bowls and even occasionally win them. If the Chiefs just don't let other teams into the party, or the lone ones that get through and escape lose in the Super Bowl there, they kind of become the legacy of like the ultimate roadblock for half of the NFL.
Yeah. Where Brady was sort of the Brady and the Patriots were sort of the precursor to that, because ultimately Ben gets his, Manning still gets two, Eli steals two from
Brady himself.
From Brady. Joe Flacco even gets one. But guys like Philip Rivers.
Door shut on him.
Doors completely shut on him. Breeze gets one. You know, there are those few guys that, yeah, they get one, but you do wonder, like, how many more does Manning get if Brady just – if Bledsoe never gets hurt, if Brady's never able to see the field,
right?
How many does he get? It's a conversation where now we're at a point where – and a lot of people bring it up maybe in a negative connotation, but here it's maybe more to kind of give a broader scope to it. Burrow is given a lot of leg room.
A lot of run
for just making the game.
Just
beating Mahomes in the playoffs, winning the AFC, going to the Super Bowl. He loses to the Rams, but he makes it.
I will say, though, to his credit, it's not like he got the doors blown off of him.
No.
The Bengals were in that game. And
they could have won it on the last play.
They could have won it. And it's unfortunate that they didn't. But, the Bengals and Joe Burrow in particular – get a lot of run. I would say it's more Burrow than the Bengals at this point. But
yep.
Burrow still gets a lot of run over the fact that he made a Super Bowl, he won the AFC. Because outside of that, what has stopped the Chiefs from being there?
Brady.
That's the other answer.
It's Brady.
And up until Joe Burrow beat the Chiefs, it literally took Tom Brady to defeat Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, in the playoffs, Tom Brady still is the only player to have multiple wins and starts over Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. That's it. You could combine the rest of the AFC. They don't have as many playoff wins against the Chiefs as Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting. Vomit. Gross. Hate it.
But they really would. Number one, it would take a lot because we're sort of entering the quote unquote prime years for quarterbacks, which is usually their 30s. I think what the average age for quarterbacks.
It's usually late 20s to 30s. Yeah.
So we've got room to go here. But we've talked about it with the AFC Championship game. The Bills having just made it. It took, 4 or 5 years for them to make it back?
Back to the AFC Championship.
Just the AFC Championship game.
Because one team keeps getting their way in particular.
Mm-hmm. So we've already seen it's not a for sure thing. Then you look at somebody like Lamar. What's his biggest detractor for not getting to a Super Bowl? It's his own play.
Mm-hmm.
For the Bills, it's coaching mistakes. I think there's also a somewhat, quote-unquote, lack of talent compared to some of their compatriots in the AFC.
I will also start to question defensive structure.
Defensive structure.
Because why do the Chiefs always look good against the Bills in the playoffs?
Yep, every single time. And so there have been other things that have held them back. But for Lamar specifically, it seems to be his play on the field in the playoffs in particular that have held him back. And then now you're with Burrow. Burrow seems to be almost, arguably, the Drew Brees of his generation. The only difference is he didn't win that Super Bowl early with the Bengals, where Brees wins it early with the Saints, and then misses playoffs in the middle of his career because his defense was horrendous. He's putting up 5,000-yard passing seasons, but his defense is so bad.
And having a legitimate MVP season last year,
mm-hmm.
Brees never got one.
Nope. Brees was in conversations, but was always beat out by Rodgers. Rodgers, right, in particular, a lot of it.
And that's where I think a lot of this has to go with the legacy of if these other two guys, these other three guys in Allen, Lamar, and Burrow don't make it, it's not just what becomes of them, because the answer is easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's what becomes of the Chiefs.
Yeah. Do you have the conversation then that Mahomes is the greatest of all time? Maybe if he doesn't have the same numbers of Super Bowl wins as Brady.
But if he has more appearances and blows it out of the water.
And he beat out guys like this, where Manning was Lamar before Lamar. Ultimately, they don't play the same, but in terms of how we're talking about them, it's the same. Great regular season quarterback. A lot of numbers. Terrible in the playoffs, or bad in the playoffs.
Sometimes very bad, sometimes good enough to win, but the team lets you down.
Yep. Where Allen, you know, what is Allen's probably closest comparison?
I don't know. He's an alien.
Rodgers.
I hate that.
I think because his closest comparison is Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers also has played in games in the playoffs where he lost them the game. Josh Allen has yet to do that.
I think 2019, you could argue Allen probably got close to losing him it.
Oh, yeah, but that's also his first year in the postseason.
But it took Rodgers late in his career to eventually have the years where it's like, oh, he's being too safe. He's
always
losing
been
these
that.
Games.
He's always been kind of like that.
But early in his career, it was the defense is bad. He's playing well enough to do this. His defense is not good enough. I look at the NFC Championship game against Seattle where Wilson ultimately throws like three picks and they still couldn't get it done. Four picks, what have you. Bad red zone play calling, if you ask certain Bills fans, coaching with Mike McCarthy, holding him back.
You mean certain Packers fans there?
Well, I mean Bills fans going to McDermott, McCarthy, there's that comparison.
There's the special teams gaffe.
There's not too many comparisons for Allen. Allen does
seem to
be... I'm
pretty sure Brandon Bostic are curse words.
Oh, yeah.
Used together.
There's not too
Wisconsin.
Many comparisons for him. You could also probably throw in Manning because of the elite regular season numbers. But it does seem to be Rodgers might be the one. The only difference is the early Super Bowl as well. I think there's a real argument that Mahomes could get a GOAT comparison if he just does what Jordan did in the NBA, which is I'm going to gatekeep everybody.
If he keeps shutting the door on the AFC. So we'll talk plenty more about this, of course, of like who else could be legacy defining. Because like we could look at the Bills and Josh Allen with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore all day. But I do want to explore other options on that. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to get your take on that as well. As this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, I'm Derek Kramer. That's Zach Jones. This is WGR. Tune in to Chopin Bulldog for our annual pre-draft special on Thursday, April 17th. That's this Thursday. From 4 to 6:30 p.m., it'll be streaming live on YouTube. We'll bring you the latest insights, mock draft predictions, insider information, and guest appearances from Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase, Nate Geary, and Sal Capaccio. The show is presented by your Upstate Honda dealers. Visit your local Upstate Honda dealer today for excellent deals on the entire Honda lineup, including the all-new Honda Passport.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I do want to remind you, Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase are taking over Resurgence Brewing for the Ultimate Draft Night Party on Thursday, April 24th at 7 p.m. Tickets are $45 and include pizza and all-you-can-drink beer and, well, drinks. Enjoy live analysis, huge TVs, and crystal clear sound so you don't miss a pick. Plus local vendors and giveaways all night, including an all-inclusive fantasy football party 412 at Resurgence Brewing, courtesy of Resurgence. No purchase necessary. Get your tickets now at resurgencebrewing.com. Our own Brian Koziel texted me and you. Big on golf, host of Tee to Green, also does a lot with Sabres games pre, post, intermission. And he tweeted us he sent us a tweet from Paige Sporanek. She's big golf influencer. She's big on YouTube and Instagram and such. She said, hot take. I wish all sporting events banned phones. It was so special to see everyone enjoying the moment and being present. That, of course, being for Rory winning during the playoff. No.
Hang on. I see where she's getting with this, though. You know, you go to a wedding and they say, like, no phones. We've got the professional photographers. Yeah. We're paying for them, that sort of thing. That's kind of the same light of what that means, means.
Are we bringing back paper tickets then?
Hang on.
We should.
I agree.
But, ready? Even if you don't, it's still remarkably simple. Sometimes I have to use my phone to get to the destination. I don't know where this place is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I'm being told, for one portion, I'm not allowed to have it out.
Okay. Fine by me.
It's impossible to police.
That's
honor the system. Issue. It becomes very quickly honor system, and no one
event,
is honoring it.
At a sporting event, that's a lot harder to be an honor system than you would need. Like, but the other part of it is like every sporting event would then have to have the phone cubbies. And I'm paying to put it in a locker.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm now going to your side.
Would that price get factored into a ticket?
No.
Probably not.
Not at all.
You're right, it should be, but probably not.
Hilarious naivety that you even thought that was the question.
We have a cubby for everyone, or you can pay for a locker where no one will steal it.
Yeah, and everyone's paying for that. As a matter of fact, the cubbies aren't even being offered. Are you mad?
Yeah, you're just paying for a locker.
You're just paying for a locker. And that's not coming with your ticket cost. Especially because, like, hey, what if this guy had his tickets given to him? Then he gets to use free locker? No.
Well, somebody would have already paid for it.
Yeah, but still, get out of here with that nonsense. So that's where I'm with you on. It's terribly naive in the way of enforcement.
Yeah, it's not going to get enforced. We all just got to stop hating on phones. It keeps us connected to the world.
No. I do love
it. But if you're enjoying a sporting event, you don't need to be connected to the world. You need to be connected to your sporting event.
Yeah. You're connected with the people that are there.
I think we more have issues with people having to take videos and pictures of every moment of their lives.
Yes.
Yes.
I think most people do want to just enjoy the moment.
If you take a picture of your food and I'm sitting there with you, I'm smacking the phone out your hand.
Oh, I do that just to
brag. I'll reach in and eat the food. As you're taking the photo.
That's actually a better power move. I like that.
803-0550, the number to call. Did want to get to maybe the biggest elephant in the room in terms of athletes looking to cement their legacy with a championship. And pretty soon, in the next few weeks, they could cement that or at least get rolling on that. We'll get to that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You are listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
I'd like to start this press conference with a question myself. What are we all going to talk about next year?
Oh, Rory. Always kidding with the media. We're talking about you going back-to-back, McIlroy. Gosh. We're going to have a full episode of Full Swing on this, by the way. And just Sunday. Just Sunday. Can't wait.
Probably. It'll be a two-parter.
It'll be a two-parter.
Days one through three. Day four.
Day four. Masters 2025, part one.
Love
part
that. That'd be great for them. Content. All the content.
I'm telling you, I listened to a lot of his press conference. I really did enjoy it just because you could see, like, in real time, a guy that, like, had all of the weight just lifted off his shoulders. That's why I mentioned he won't, but like it does feel like he could be told tomorrow he has to retire and be like, okay,
mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like it, but okay, I can do that. I can live with that. A lot of legacy talk now across sports with Rory McIlroy. As Jeremy put it, he crossed his name off that list. He's got the career Grand Slam. He's won a Masters.
I will say I think it's legacy upgraded.
Yeah, because you know he can add to it.
Yeah, but like it's also. I don't know necessarily if it's like it's defining any more than it is an upgrade now.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's always been that guy. Like he was always solid, not spectacular. Sometimes he hadn't won a major in a long time, but like he was always solid.
Mm-hmm.
He was always good. This puts it to an elevation, an upgrade.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like we just talked about Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers has the Super Bowl win, but his legacy became: should he have more? Here's the thing, your legacy doesn't like cement itself. You're perfect. Nothing can touch it. LeBron James goes through this like once every week where something is always affecting his legacy.
Well, that's because ESPN cannot stop talking about
cannot move off of him.
They don't know what to do.
But in terms of guys who have not reached the pinnacle, yeah, Rory had won majors, but he'd finally won his Masters. In terms of guys who have not even gotten their sports championship, we were talking about in the break, there's two guys that really come to mind here in hockey.
Which those playoffs will start next week.
Yep. Connor McDavid.
And Austin Matthews.
Two guys we talked about a few months ago with the Four Nations.
And we literally talked about a legacy-defining moment for the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how it shook out. McDavid gets the winner in overtime.
Matthews is on the ice.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, Matthews has a quality chance within that game himself, and he can't bury it.
Nope. Matthews did have two assists in that game.
So, he did, though.
So it wasn't an empty calorie game.
He was playing really well, actually, mm-hmm. in that game all throughout. You and I watched that game, and we were like, this is awesome.
I love that game. It was so much fun.
It was so good. But we look at this now, though, heading into the playoffs. There's more that has to be done. Now, I talk about legacy upgrade. Well, right now, what is Austin Matthews' legacy in Toronto? Talented player, and he's not able to get past the first round oftentimes.
Yep. Great goal scorer in the regular season.
And then in the playoffs, he's one of those guys that fades. It's him and Marner typically that are looked at as the guys that fade, and Nylander's the one that tries to, like, carry them through the depths.
Yeah, will them to. I mean, and especially with Matthews in particular, Marner as well, I guess if you want to throw him into this conversation. It's also how poorly they play in round one. The fact that, like, for a while, that was the legacy of, oh, thank God they got past round one. Thank goodness it happened finally.
Yeah. Just 2 years ago, it was, oh, my God, you can't get out of. Oh, my God, we actually did it.
Yeah. And then quickly was snuffed out by Florida. But that's how low the expectations had gotten.
And now it's becoming, you're a Hart Trophy winner. You're a three-time Richard winner, Matthews. Get it done. Especially for a franchise that has never won more than two playoff series ever. Did you know that?
Well, I know they're a lot like the Yankees in the sense of they won their trophies before, like, the sport, like, it was modern.
So, ready? They still have never won more than two playoff series.
Boy, oh boy.
So the more things expanded, the worse they got.
Yep.
They haven't been to a Stanley Cup. Not just won one. They have not been to one because that requires you to win a third series.
Mm-hmm.
That is beyond brutal.
Yeah, their last Stanley Cup came in 66-67.
And ready? Their last Eastern Conference Finals appearance is also a big thing to look at here because that's winning more than two playoff series.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, to your point, they have no conference championships. They have no president's trophies.
Yeah, so it is wild. And now, Matthews, you have an opportunity here to change it. And what's going to really make a big deal of this? If you don't do it, Marner's definitely gone.
Yeah, you've been on there for a while. You think that
we're getting to a point. I feel like he's already 1 foot out the door. Yeah. But now it turns into, if you don't win this, and if you lose in the first round again, good night.
Mm-hmm.
Marner's gone.
They are the currently one seed in the Atlantic. I think that's going to get.
And that's the other part of it is that it's now going to be amplified. You're facing little brother. If everything holds up,
mm-hmm.
All they have to do is get like a point against the Buffalo Sabres. Not hard to do,
apparently. Oh, I do love Toronto versus Ottawa. I love that series. It could be bad, yeah. But I kind of like the storyline.
By the way, so the last, when it comes down to it, I looked at it, of the last time that they even made the conference finals, 1994.
Okay.
That was the last time that they won two playoff series. Pat Burns was the coach.
And you mentioned it, as the playoffs have expanded, they've done worse.
And it's not even an expansion thing. At this point, it is. You have to win two playoff series just to get to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
You have to win a third playoff series just to get to the Stanley Cup. Toronto has never won more than two playoff series because that expansion is when it happened, and they've never gotten back to the Cup since they last won it. Because it requires
drought.
A third series win.
Mm-hmm. Been a long drought. And Matthews is sort of the face of it because we had just gone through this with the goal-scoring record with Ovi. I think I saw a tweet that if it weren't for all the games Matthews has already missed, he'd be on a higher pop already.
That pissed me off. The hockey news mm-hmm. had said something yep. of like, Austin Matthews is scoring at a higher goals per game average. And it's like, oh, my God, nothing. Not everything's about you, Toronto. Shut up.
But looking at it now, a few weeks later, that's his own legacy. You're the best goal scorer of your generation, on pace to be. And you've won one playoff series?
Yes. It's not even the fact, like, and you're losing in qualifying rounds even.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something to be said about this core of the Maple Leafs. At first, it was endearing, that first playoff loss to the Washington Capitals, who were the top seed. They scrapped with them for six games.
Mm-hmm.
And for Ovechkin, even, it took him a while.
I was going to make the comparison to Ovi of like, but does it ever become that where the hockey world seemingly was rooting for Ovi? Is the same going to hold true for Toronto and Matthews? Especially if Marner does leave and they have to kind of go through a retool and
refigure it out. And if you lose
in
the first round again, it is to another division rival.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost to Boston. You've lost to Montreal. You've lost to the Lightning. You've lost to the Panthers. This adds another team to it. With this core.
Yeah.
It's another division rival that you're supposed to be better than.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with how Ottawa's played and how they're constructed. You should beat them.
Yeah.
But we all thought that in 2020. Or 2021, I should say. When you were about to face the hapless Montreal Canadiens, who then take a storybook comeback down 3-1 and turn it into a Stanley Cup Finals appearance. And then there's the other side. Connor. We talk about how Lamar Jackson has several MVPs, and he does not have that ring. We talk about how Josh Allen now has that MVP, he does not have that ring. The Edmonton Oilers, with this core, between Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, they have 4 already for Hart trophies. Probably going to get a 5th if Draisaitl gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 5 MVP seasons. Neither of you have won a cup. Because McDavid has 3. Draisaitl won one in 2020. And typically winning a Hart trophy means you're going to at least compete for a cup, let alone win one. Because if you go back, if I go back all the way to 2002, there are only 5 people that have won a Hart trophy that have not won a Stanley Cup. Jose Theodore, Joe Thornton, Henrik Sedin, Carey Price, Taylor Hall.
One on there is not like the others.
One is active still, mm-hmm. And I know that's not what you meant by that. But he also can latch onto a team late and win a cup. But every one of these players outside of that, and Henrik Sedin is like the Philip Rivers of hockey, the Sedin twins.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that were so good that they should have won one. And then they almost did, and they didn't.
2011, right? Boston, yeah.
Yeah. So now you need to make sure for both of these players that you win one, especially for McDavid. The guy that was drafted after you for the quote-unquote Tank Bowl,
mm-hmm.
The great Tank Bowl of 2015, the guy drafted after you beat you. No, not beat you. He won one the year before you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
It is fun to look at, though, with McDavid Draisaitl, and Draisaitl.
Draisaitl, oddly enough, the guy that was taking 2 picks ahead of you and the guy that was taking 1 pick ahead of you, Samson and Samuel,
yeah.
Reinhart and Bennett, they beat you.
They beat you. Looking back at that Stanley Cup final last year, that was a lot of fun. The build up to Game 7, the reverse almost sweep of
that would have been amazing.
7. But you look at it now too with McDavid specifically. Now that he had won the Four Nations,
you look at also,
what if he had won Game 7 and where is his legacy at?
Think
now
about what that postseason was for him though. He was also on a tear. A generational tear that was threatening to claim the playoffs record.
Yeah, 25 games played, 42 points, 34 assists.
Did he end up breaking that? I think he just fell short.
I believe he just fell short.
And not just fell short there, but he fell short with he couldn't win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried. It was on his back.
He won the Conn Smythe.
He won the Conn Smythe. So now his legacy is being defined in that tough sense.
He did fall short. Gretzky has it with 47 points.
Mm-hmm.
McDavid had 42.
Yeah.
And that was because for two games he cooled off.
Mm-hmm.
And the team was able to rally around that and still win. Because Florida became hellbent on slowing him down.
Mm-hmm. I think McDavid, though, for me, it's easier for us to talk about Allen and Lamar because one of them is our guy, and the other one, you could argue, has taken an MVP season away from Lamar, and vice versa. McDavid, to me, is on a tier of his own. It really has become – he's the best player in hockey, hasn't won a championship. We mentioned Matthews, like, because comparing him to Ovi, they're both the great goal scorers of their generations, but – hockey got around Ovi to go win one. I think a lot of people really wanted to see that. The reason why I really don't think it'll happen for Matthews is because ultimately the better player, and maybe I guess the more the fan favorite in McDavid, hasn't won his either. And he's only made it to one cup final. And I will never forget watching Edmonton with the seconds ticking down on game 7 out of gas.
Yeah,
just out of gas and almost like mercifully being like, can we end the game like 20 seconds early? Like this is hard
it's
to watch.
It's just not going to end up happening.
It's hard to watch. It's not going to happen. Even if a goal went into force overtime,
you'd have to then find
they're
going to
get killed. You know, it looked like Florida was just going to get all over them. And then the painful, he gets the Conn Smythe because
and he doesn't go
how
out.
Does he not get it?
Yeah. And he doesn't go out to the ice to go get it, which is the right thing.
Yeah, I understood that. I understood
you
that.
You looked in that locker room and like you get an inside look of that, and it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you want to be there with the guys that you were there
yeah.
with.
Yeah, but you look at some of the players he's compared to, Gretzky and Crosby, because he was sort of the next.
He was the next guy.
He's the next generation guy. Both won multiple cups. Crosby gets it done early. Crosby gets a lot of his stuff done early. The gold medal as well.
Yeah.
Where McDavid, we're,
granted,
we're
in, McDavid's more circumstance.
Oh, and a lot of this all ends up being circumstance of the team you're on and what's going on.
But even the international play circumstance.
Of course, the Olympics and everything going on with pro players not being able to do it. But then also look at the team McDavid is on. He's on the Oilers. Gretzky's team.
Yes.
In an era where a Canadian team hasn't won Canada's sports championship in we're getting close to
since
30 years.
Since 1993, yeah.
And he's the guy. And he winds up on that team and still hasn't been able to do it. The only way it's better for Canada is if he wound up on Toronto. But even still.
It's more than 30 years, by the way.
It is more than 30 years.
It was 1993.
Yep. So we're over 30 years now that the Canadian team has not won a Stanley Cup. He's the guy. And the closest they got to was a demoralizing Game 7 loss against Florida last year.
And before that, it was the collapse against Boston for Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
as we brought up the Sedin twins just now.
Yep.
And yeah, it was also, all right, it looks like the series is over. Cool, let's pack it up. And no.
And the roar
they,
back.
They win Game 5. They win Game 6. Can they do it? Nope.
Nope. And that's where I think the legacy for some of these guys comes up. And you look at it too, like McDavid and Allen have those moments. Allen leaving the field 13 seconds with the lead and ultimately losing it. McDavid yes. McDavid puts up a Conn Smythe performance, a all-timer, and loses in Game 7. Where Lamar is a bit different. Lamar has been more, him personally has failed. He's closer to Matthews in that sense, where he has not performed under the brightest lights. But in the regular season, he's been a man amongst boys.
And there have been a few postseasons where, for both Jackson and Auston Matthews in two different sports, they have played well enough to win.
Yep.
And ultimately, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just say it's a concrete slate. But yes, there have been some postseasons for both of them where you didn't do enough. And this is an opportunity immediately for Matthews next week. He has a chance to do something about it. I'm really intrigued to see what happens with both of those players before I now take this dagger in my hand and shove it and twist it in the side here, Zach. Mike Trout
mm-hmm.
yep. is a player that could really use a ring to upgrade his legacy.
Yeah,
because he's looking like one of the best that will never have shown up to the World Series.
Showing up for the World Series, he's one of the best to like basically never play in the playoffs.
Yes.
Most of his career has been non-playoffs. I mean, they have the longest drought in MLB right now at 10 seasons. He has one playoff appearance, and I believe it was a wild card in which he didn't play well, but he was like 23.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the stunning
ever
thing.
Since then, he's not even shown up to the playoffs, let alone the dance.
And then along with that, for his legacy has also been affected by injuries. I bring this up a lot. He hasn't played more than 100 games more than once in the last 5 years. Did it one time, and then he played like 120?
As a matter of fact, there was a sickening duo between him and Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
See the now infamous tungsten arm.
Oh yeah, baby.
Tweet, where the two of them would do great things and they would still lose.
Yep.
It does turn into Mike Trout. You might need to leave the Angels just so you have a chance to go chase one. In addition to the fact that, yeah, you might still be one of the best that never even gets there.
Yeah.
But there's an opportunity, maybe. When's his contract up, Zach?
I think we've still got like 3-4 years. We got a while.
So he has to be traded.
He's got a while. Well, I mean, they're 9-6. Playing well.
Okay, buddy.
Playing well.
They're already back to closer to 500.
Yeah, they lost their first series of the year to the Astros. It's all right. Texas got swept by Seattle.
Foolish boy.
The division is still very much not getting run away by in April.
But it's not going to be won by the Angels
either. No, probably not. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump in on this conversation. I do like looking at a lot of these athletes, too, because I think what's fun with this, too, is you very quickly realize it's not just a you problem.
Yeah.
And that's...
Like, we are not alone here in Buffalo at all.
And that's something I always struggle with, too, is discussing, you know, some of these sports and seeing other guys win, and you're like, why can't it be us? And it's like, well, I mean, because, like, for them, that was also a thing. You know, they were going through their own issues. Minnesota sports, in particular...
Oh, my God.
Are ones that are regularly just like, I don't know. We're never bad. We're pretty good, but never great. You know? Very consistently like that.
Across the
Timberwolves
teams.
May be the only team in Minnesota where it's like, oh, they're bad.
But there's another one. Timberwolves.
Kevin Garnett. He had to go to Boston.
Kevin Garnett had to go to Boston to do it. Anthony Edwards has a chance to turn himself into one of the newer young stars of the NBA. He has a chance that he has to go ahead and reach out and take it.
Mm-hmm. Last year, it felt like they were maybe going to do that.
And then they didn't.
And then they fell apart a little bit.
And it turns into another legacy for player, Luka Doncic.
Mm-hmm.
And now his legacy gets changed because of the fact that he got traded. Almost erroneously.
I mean, almost.
Okay, actually erroneously.
I was like, I want Nico Harrison to never work in basketball again once he's eventually fired.
Yes. Like, for some reason, he gets traded. That's going to change his legacy now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got to pair up with LeBron. Instead of being the guy.
Well, you are the future guy. But that's the thing, too, where like...
If they win it this year, though, for example, it changes his legacy in a negative way.
It's not Luka's ring. Look at Kevin Durant, if we want to go to the NBA.
Oh, yes.
He has to go to a dynasty already to win one. Now,
and even then,
almost everyone... unanimously acknowledges his rings don't mean as much as Kawhi in 2019 with Toronto.
Funny enough.
Giannis with Milwaukee.
Even more funny enough, Durant's first swing with the Warriors ultimately fails.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
They set a record for wins, but then they lose the final.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot to it where Luka Doncic, that trade kind of ruins a little bit for him.
But there is also that, like, ring chasing. Or, yeah, like, the circumstances can hurt you as well. Because where I think we brought him up a lot, Aaron Rodgers.
James Harden also.
Harden, yeah. But I've brought up Rodgers a lot. Rodgers had some of the nasty legacy with Green Bay, of failed playoffs. He's a five-time MVP, only made it to one Super Bowl. Yes, he did win it, but that five MVPs changes the conversation. It's always been the combo with Lamar as well. Having two, maybe should have won three. Really? He's never even made the Super Bowl. He's a quarterback. What are we doing here? You like that kind of feeling. What did Rodgers try to do? He tried to go to another team like his compatriots in Brady and in Manning and go win a Super Bowl or at least resurrect a dying franchise. Brett Favre did a lot for the Minnesota Vikings to kind of bring them up. They go to an NFC Championship game. Ultimately, Favre throws it away, which – really should be Favre's legacy, but neither here nor there. I mean, the dude threw playoff picks like nobody's
business.
Well,
his legacy's turning into something completely different.
Yeah, state of Mississippi, not loving him, allegedly. But with Rodgers, he goes to the Jets. Why? They're a talented team, but also, well, that's going to help your legacy. You're in New York. You go where Favre couldn't win from Green Bay. You bring a team up, and instead it's a disaster. Blows out his Achilles in game one, four plays in. not his fault by any means, but it did happen. And the second year, your coach is fired 5 games in.
Your GM is fired 2 weeks later.
And it's a bunch of your buddies there, and you never even sniff the playoffs.
Not even sniff the playoffs. You're a bottom 10 team.
Yeah, and in the longest drought in the NFL right now, the Jets, that's considered one of the low points is your era.
And not to mention the longest active drought.
Yeah.
They beat the Sabres by several months.
There we go.
Thank you, Jets.
But there's something to that, too, in bringing it back, like where Rory winning in the fashion he did yesterday played into it. If he would have blown everybody out of the water, it wouldn't have hurt him by any means. But in a way, him winning the way he did was sort of like that's how it should have gone. I like how that worked out. I like how that played out. For Manning, I kind of like that he won in a year where he had to be carried by his defense after years with the Colts having bad defenses.
Yes.
And he himself playing bad, he finally had a team good enough.
Especially
that
when
he
that
didn't
same
have to be
team,
Superman.
He was Superman for that franchise.
Yeah.
In Denver. And they got shellacked.
They're blown out
in the
by
Super
Seattle.
Bowl.
Yeah. 40-48 or whatever it was.
Yeah. That was one of the weirdest Super
Bowls. And
so
there's also points to that have like made the moments bigger than they are. You know, Manning's last game, he's not the Super Bowl MVP. And he arguably wasn't even their best quarterback on the roster.
That's right.
Which is weird because the other guy was Brock Osweiler, and he certainly was not the better quarterback.
He was not a good quarterback.
But how bad Manning was playing, it made the conversation more open. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Talking about legacies, and thanks to Rory McIlroy for that. But speaking of golf, we have your ticket to 8 amazing golf experiences with the WGR VIP golf card. For just one low price, $129, you unlock a season of golfing adventures, including Diamond Hawk, Shamrock Hills, Attica's 10th Hole and Golf Course, Bobolink, and Golf Dojo. Your WGR VIP golf card also hooks you up with a free box of premium Vero X1 golf balls from Encore Golf and score deals at Rick Zurak Golf Warehouse on Transit in Bowmansville. A portion of the proceeds will benefit PGA Hope. You can get all the details and purchase your WGR VIP golf card today at getmyperks.com.
And Paterka getting it back again. Darlene will send it back that way. There's a jam play, scores. Alex Tuck at the near post. Got a stick on that one, and the Sabres, before the first penalty expires, get one on the power play. They'll stay with the man advantage, now trailing 6-3 with 11:21 to go in the third.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. The game would ultimately end 7-4. Sabres
cool.
Lose again. Derek's not happy about it. We do have two more games to wrap up the year, both at home. Toronto tomorrow, Philadelphia on Thursday. Both 7 p.m. puck drops with 6 p.m. pre-games starting right here on WGR.
At least I never have to deal with the Sabres on the road again for the rest of the year. Give me peace.
I'll say again. I mean,
it's for 2 games.
Yeah. Season comes.
I meant what I said. Rest of the year.
Before we get started here, do want to let you know, listen to Shelton Bulldog all week for your chance to win 2 lawn tickets to see Breaking Benjamin and 3 Days Grace at Darien Lake Amphitheater on September 7th, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets are on sale at livenation.com. On the other side of things, we are, well, we're closer to 1 week away than 2 weeks away. Very close to the NFL draft. That is going to be next Thursday in Green Bay, and we are getting more and more national reports as well of players visiting the Bills today. I've seen Adam Schefter bring up that South Carolina defensive tackle TJ Sanders is going to visit the Bengals, and then tomorrow with the Bills. And then Ian Rappaport reported that defensive tackle Deion Walker out of Kentucky scheduled to visit the Bills on Tuesday as well.
That's interesting, because I feel like Sanders is a 3-tech.
Now, I will bring up on real quick on Walker, by the way. Ian Rappaport did bring this up. It was discovered at the Combine he was playing in 2024 with a stress fracture in his back.
Ooh.
Now fully healthy and ready, Walker aims to show why he was rated as a top defensive tackle before 2024.
Oh, my God. A fracture in your back?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now, I will say with Walker, I'm a little worried, but I do wonder if maybe the stress fracture was part of this. Some of his athletic testing was not great. It was more along the lines of, oh, he's just 6'7", 340. He's just a big guy.
Yeah.
But he's not moving very well. I wonder if the stress fractures played into that. That also might be why the Bills are bringing him in.
That probably does. Mm-hmm. Like, the Bills are probably like, hey, we want some questions answered. How's your back, buddy?
Yeah, now that you're quote-unquote healthy, we're going to run you through some tests.
Instead of shaking their hand, their pre-draft visit test is, all right, we're going to pat you on the back, see how that does.
We're going to see if you win. That's so terrible. Cool. That's terrible.
I know that is.
We talked about the player invitations, the top 30 visits a lot last week, mentioning how does it really signal that's where the Bills are going to go. Or the Bills may be more of a team like we just brought up with maybe Walker, where they're like, we had questions. We want you to come into our building with our medical staff.
The thing is to look for the trends. How many of a position are they looking at?
Because
That's going to tell you where they're looking, where the ideas are going, where their eyes are gazing
at. That makes it curious because for a while it's been wide receivers. But, wide receivers been the biggest position so far.
But also look at where those players are projected.
Yep.
That's what I mean by direction. Mm-hmm. You're looking at players that are, hey, they're probably going to look at a guy in day two.
Mm-hmm. Round two, maybe if they trade back into
round two or round three. They'll find their way to get back into round three to get one of these guys. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. Defensive tackle, Sanders is typically seen as a second rounder kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of helps out with the direction of, well, they feel like they can take a D-tackle probably anywhere in this draft.
That's somewhat made me think about Trey Amos being the pick in round one.
Corner out of Ole Miss.
He did, from reports, visit with the Bills or was going to visit with the Bills. I'm not sure if it was a week later report. But that's the position. I everyone knows I'm a big Kenneth Grant guy. Like, that's my dream scenario in round one, or if somehow they can get him around two, fantastic.
By the way, Benjamin Morrison.
The Notre Dame cornerback as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do wonder if, when you look at the corners, like you mentioned, guys that where are they projected to go, those guys are late one, early two.
Which screams, hope you're ready for this, everyone. Bills are going to trade down. Find a way to move up from 4 to 3.
Mm.
And we're picking early round two.
I think there's a possibility there. There's also the possibility of they just like the defensive tackle depth, edge depth, defensive line, more for rounds 2 and 3, where cornerbacks and that's my thing too, is they need an immediate starter at cornerback. That's the one position they have not touched in free agency. It feels like we are forever away from maybe a Russell Douglas reunion. We got Dane Jackson, but that's not really going to do it.
Right.
That's where receiver you could maybe argue was there. But with corner, it feels a lot like the Kyer Elam Christian Benford year, where, especially because of Trey White's injury, I mean, look who ultimately is starting week one against the Rams. It's both rookies. While, yes, they have Benford, so it's not as bad, that's my thing. It's pointing to, I think, cornerback is going to be their round one pick.
And I think it makes sense that it could be.
Mm-hmm.
It could be like the wide receivers from last year. We see enough here right now in that late first, early second round.
Yeah.
We're comfortable with the number of players that are on the board. We're going to trade down. Picking 35-ish or 36, and we'll be okay. We know that corner's not going to start going on some sort of, like, disgusting run, kind of like wide receivers were the moment that the Bills traded down, another two went. But they were still comfortable with how the board looked. Actually, it was another three that went, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Because Pearsall was in there, too.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was a lot.
The Bills were still very comfortable with, there's still enough players here between Coleman or Ladd McConkie or A.D. Mitchell. Like, there was still a number of receivers there that they were comfortable with what was going on. At corner, it looks like it's going to be the same thing at the end of round one and the start of round two, where there might be enough guys there, especially some that they have pre-draft visits with, that, again, everyone's going to hate me for saying this because I'm going to will it into existence because I keep talking about it. Operation Make a Pick Bills might not happen on Thursday night next week.
I think that, and you've brought it up a lot, but I think that's always been something that's maybe sitting there, especially when we've talked about how much they like the third round pick, how much they like more picks. They do like to move around. It hasn't always worked out. I'm not saying it always has worked out, but they do like to do that. They like to have the ammunition.
They like the manipulation of the board.
Yep.
And it's a conviction. You have your guys. You know where you value. The thing is that they also respect value.
Yeah.
That is the part that I like about them doing that all the time is they respect value. They know if there's a player in round two they need to go up and get. They need the ammunition to do so. And you go get them. They want some player in round three. Well, you got to make a little bit of draft board manipulation work so that you can get back into round three. I don't know what happens from here. But what I do know is you and me are going to be sitting in these chairs. Mm-hmm. So you have to prepare for the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Which is we're sitting here at 12:30 a.m.
They're
not making a pick. For a second straight year. And I'm just going to make sure I preface this by saying it. And I know this is not popular with everyone. And you can already tell how irritated I am by this. If the Kansas City Chiefs want to pay to move up one spot, you take their pick.
Yeah. I agree. I agree.
It's one spot. They're going to take something you're not anyway.
Yeah.
Again.
I agree. It's just, it is.
No, that person's not destined for success. Can we all stop with that?
No, but to the PR sense, it keeps working in the favor of the Chiefs.
I don't care.
I know.
If they want to move up one space, and I mean, because that's where they're picking.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to move from 31 to 30, any payment is worth it because they're already overpaying for it.
Yeah.
For a player that you don't want.
Now, we do have to hit another timeout here real quick.
Yeah, cannot get on this soapbox again.
But I do want to mention this. There have been reports that no one really wants to trade up. I think the Bills may want to trade back to get more picks, but who is worth going up to get? It's not a loaded wide receiver class, and the quarterbacks, ultimately, if you're Cleveland and the Giants and the Titans, it is where it is, but we're also finding out teams aren't valuing that fifth-year option maybe as much. Maybe with quarterback, it's different.
Quarterback, it is different, I think. And that's going to depend on where the board falls.
Mm-hmm.
If a team reaches on one like a Jackson Dart, kiss any sort of trade down conversations pretty much out the window.
Yeah. But if we're at pick 30 and Jackson Dart's still on the board, a team like maybe Cleveland goes, we want to have that fifth-year option. I don't really think they're moving up with Buffalo.
Say it's Travis Hunter, though, and mm-hmm. Travis Hunter and Jackson Dart. You come away saying, hey, we had a like the movie. We had a great day.
Oh, what a line read. But to that point, though, I mean, if it's Cleveland, I don't think they're moving up with the Bills. I think that's a move where the Eagles make it. And they just go, yeah, we'll swap one spot. We'll make you overpay for a quarterback, and we'll move on. Where with the Bills, it's moving up three spots. It's a bit more to spend. And it's not too much, but last year it happened because the Chiefs wanted a specific wide receiver.
But they weren't
behind you is necessarily.
But Carolina traded up.
Yep.
Also one spot to pick a wide receiver.
I will grant, though, I think they're a horribly run organization that overthought a lot of things.
Oh, so you think Cleveland's a model organization for this?
No, but I think they are playing more with fire where Carolina maybe wasn't.
Andrew Berry did not get fired for the whole Deshaun Watson thing.
No, that's true.
So I rest my case.
We got to take a quick time out here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, wrap up the show after we get back. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I can't wait to annoy everyone in less than 2 weeks because I'm going to be trade down guy. Not because I want them to, but I'm really thinking it's the time to, like, it's going to be something that they could very well do. I'm more or less embracing it. Just so that, like, I don't have to feel annoyed when it actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with the early second round is going to be a boon for talent. And if you could trade down, get yourself, first of all, you're back in that early second round range. That value is there. But then, more importantly, B, you could take one of those two later second round picks and you can move. with ammunition from your trade back. You have extra ammunition and picks that you're not going to use. You use those picks to move up.
I'm not there.
I'm preparing you for the worst.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's my job as your friend. It's my duty, not my job. I don't get paid for this. But like, as your friend, be ready for it. And for all of you, it's a job because I do get paid to say this. Be ready for it because I don't know a lot of you personally.
I'm prepared for
it. Be ready for it and try to take it in the best way possible, which is you can then become aggressive players in the second round in a deep draft.
Yeah, that is loaded with starter talent at key
positions. I love the idea of it simply for that.
I don't see a lot of teams wanting to trade up. Personally, for the quarterbacks, I think Tennessee goes Cam Ward. At 9, it's Shedeur Sanders to New Orleans.
Buffalo traded back twice last year in a draft where there were no trade action, and they were not for quarterbacks.
Sabres Live coming up next after a quick timeout. This is WGR.